All right, for a message this morning. Anybody here ever thought of being a hermit? Few of you. Me too. Some people are just naturally more people orientated than other people. Some days it don't seem like too bad of an idea just to be a hermit, does it? I have some support, it sounds like. Sometimes we get tired of being busy and we get tired of running around wildly trying to get everything done. And all we want to do is just be all alone, and it wouldn't seem like a bad idea if we didn't see anybody for quite some time. But the problem is God created us with a need for each other. He did. He created us to need and want fellowship with other people. And sometimes we see people try to get away from that, and it's a struggle for them. Talk a little bit, first thing here, about a man by the name of Christopher Knight. At the age of 20, he decided he had enough of people for a while, and he's going to get away from people for a while. And so he did. He got away from people for 27 years. He was called a hermit, if you want to call him that. He left his job in Boston. He got in his car and he just started driving. He didn't bother to tell anybody where he was going, his family, his friends. He just got in his car and he left. He drove all the way up to Maine, up into the wilderness in the very remote area. He drove till he was nearly out of gas. He found a little trail to go off into, and then another little trail off of that trail. And he drove till he couldn't drive anymore. He got out of his car, he threw the keys in the center console, and he started walking through the woods. To the most of the world, he ceased to exist, and that was what he was trying to accomplish. He was done. He says himself he don't know what caused himself to suddenly snap like this and leave on a whim, but it's what he decided to do, and it's what he did. His goal was to get completely lost, and he managed to accomplish that goal. He had no way of surviving, no gun, no fishing pole. Along the way, he did find some remote cabins that had some gardens, but he was raised with very strong morals against theft, and so he avoided stealing. He survived for 10 days eating nothing but berries and a dead bird that he found. But hunger finally got the best of him, and he resorted to theft. He started stealing from the cabins he'd come across. He finally found a secluded spot, kind of with a cave-like area, and he decided to make this his home. But it wasn't long before he realized he couldn't just live in a cave by himself. He actually had to survive somehow. He had to eat something. So he got to know the area very well. And he, in a certain radius, walking distance around him, he found cabins that he could raid. He learned to watch very carefully from the edge of these woods. They were mostly weekend cabins. He figured out people's patterns, when they would come, when they would go, and he would, in the middle of the nights, rainy nights, were his favorite when it was dark and overcast. He would go into these cabins and he would raid them. And that was his life. He would even use people's boats or canoes he'd borrow them and take it back to his cave loaded down. Then he'd take their boat back. And he says every time he broke into a cabin, he was still smote in his conscience. He knew it was wrong, but it was his only way of surviving, he thought, so that's what he did. And finally, after 27 years and over 1,000 raids on people's cabins, he was finally caught and put into jail. Seems like a waste of a life to me. That's not the lifestyle I would choose, but it's what he chose. And it worked until he got caught. So he was a hermit, all by himself, or was he? Was he truly by himself out there? According to the dictionary definition of being a hermit, that's what he was. But what I find interesting is even though he tried to get away from everybody, And he accomplished that to a certain point. He still needed people in his life to survive. How about that? He still relied on people coming to their weekend cabins with their supplies, and then he'd come along after they left and clean up whatever they left behind. So he was a hermit, but he still depended on people. He still needed community. Maybe he wasn't meeting, speaking, and socializing with people, but he still needed people. I don't know if I gave the title of the message or not, but I titled it The Blessings of Community. I think a lot of times for myself, I underestimate the power of community in my life. Maybe I'm a little different. It's kind of weird. I like people. I actually like to get together with people, but at the same time, I'm a little bit of an introvert. I don't mind sitting at home by myself in the evening. I wouldn't want to make a lifestyle out of it, but it doesn't bother me as much as it would some people. But I want to look at the church as a community this morning and the value of it. Have you ever wondered why we even go to church, most of us? Most of us were raised in a godly Christian home. We know what the preacher's going to say, don't we? We grew up with this. We know he's going to get up and he's going to say we're saved by grace through faith. We know he's going to tell us we need to accept Jesus as our Savior. We know he's going to read all these old Bible stories we heard all our growing up life, and we know them. Most of us know all these stories. So why do you even bother going to church? You know what, if you know what we're going to say. I think it's because of the community and the encouragement we get from being together. Am I wrong? Maybe I am. Maybe that's just part of it. But I think a lot of it is the community we get and the structure within a church that gives us a sense of belonging and a sense of, just fellowshipping with people. The church is for spiritual teaching. I'm not trying to say it's not. It is to teach us Bible truths. It's where I learned to become a better dad. It's where I learned to become a better husband. It's where I learned things like that, but it's so much more than that. It's a place where people care about me and the well-being of my family, and if I'm the man I should be, I care for the people around me and the well-being of them also. You know what? It's interesting. Even the atheists understand this. A man by the name of Sanderson Jones, I think he was from the UK, started a movement in 2013 called the Sunday Assembly. And what it was essentially a church for atheists. It was structured very much like a church service. They'd get together on Sunday mornings. They would sing songs. They weren't Christian godly songs by any means, but they would sing. They would have a speaker that would give teachings, and I think they would even pass an offering. And it became a very powerful, it grew majorly. I don't know how big, but there's probably thousands of these locations now. It's spread across, it's in the U.S., and it became very popular. Why is that? It's because people know they need community. They need each other. I'm going to read a little bit out of Hebrews. This would probably be the text verse, what I would call the text verse of the message today. Hebrews chapter 10. Just read a couple of verses, 23 through 25. Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised. And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching. He says, let us hold fast our faith. How do we do that? And then he goes on to tell us there in verse 25, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. He wrote this, I think, if I understand right, I think Paul wrote Hebrews. But he wrote this at a time when Christians were being persecuted, and it meant death if you were caught as a Christian. They would take you and torture you and make an example out of you. And it would seem like the easiest way not to get caught would be to not go to church, right? Why go there? You know the authorities aren't. They're not stupid. They know to look for church services, you know, find these Christians when they're all together. The more you can catch together, the less searching you have to do throughout the rest of the city. But even in those times of persecution, he's telling them not to forsake the assembling of themselves together. He knew that they needed this encouragement to get together as a church community. Verse 24 says, provoke unto love and good works. Provoke isn't a very friendly sounding word. We would probably, most of us here, consider ourselves a loving people. And we try to get along with everybody. What are we doing provoking? I'm not much of a confrontational type of a guy. I'd as soon run away as argue with you. You know what I mean? But here he's saying provoke. I think sometimes a good argument can be, a good healthy argument can be about as good a relationship builder as anything. You know what I mean? Just the, not an angry arguing, but just a friendly banter back and forth between two people that love each other is a healthy way of building a relationship. Adam Clark calls it stir to excitement. I kind of like that, stir to excitement. James 5:16 says, confess your faults one to another, pray one for another, that ye may be healed. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. Now, I kind of pulled that out of the middle of nowhere, but how are we supposed to confess our faults one to another if we aren't meeting together? How can you do it if everybody's off doing their own thing? Just a thought I want to leave with you. It's once again giving the thought of community. And it bothers me a little bit, or maybe a whole lot. I see some folks today, and I don't want to judge them in any way, shape, or form, but it bothers me a little bit when I see some people that are in a good church community, and they are, and for some reason, they pick one little thing they don't like about the church. And so they go start their own little house church, just one or two of them. I don't know why that bothers me. I know the Bible says, where two or three gathered together, there am I in the midst of them. And I know there's times that on mission fields, for instance, people can be stretched a little thin. And so there's a small little church here. Or there's other circumstances that people can't help but meet with one or two other people in a house. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people that are part of a godly church, and for some reason, it's not quite what they like, so they start their own little brand of church that is so very similar, but just off a little bit in this one other area. I don't know, something to think about. Something about that doesn't quite vibe with me. Maybe I'm wrong. You can tell me if I'm wrong after church. You can come tell me. I don't care. But what I'm trying to say is don't take your church family for granted. Even though we don't see everything eye to eye perfectly all the time, that don't mean we can't help each other. Don't mean that at all. In fact, the very fact that we don't see everything eye to eye is sometimes what helps us balance each other out. Listen to this statistic. Suicide is the number 10 cause of death in America today. That's a terrible statistic. Research done in the United Kingdom directly linked suicidal thoughts and tendencies to loneliness. People get lonely and they get depressed and discouraged. They directly link that together. And in a world where we have every means of communication known to man, I mean, we can communicate like no other nowadays. We have social media and phones and emails, and we can connect with people like we never known before, just very easily. Yet in this world of communication, people are still lonely. They're still lonely. They have friends, but unfortunately, they're the type of friends that the prodigal son picked. We call them fair-weather friends. They're there for the fun, and when the party's over, they all go home. And in this connected world, there's still loneliness. And I think that's where the role of a church can fit perfectly. Even though I've mentioned before, we don't always see everything eye to eye perfectly, and we don't have to, but we can still get together in fellowship. God knew exactly what he was doing when he designed the church. He knew we needed it so we could be a help to others and that we could be helped ourselves. Something else I want to think about a little bit is the wealth of information that is within in a church setting like this. Why is it so hard for me sometimes to go to a brother that has walked a road that I'm walking now and ask for advice? Just because you ask for advice doesn't mean you have to follow it, but information can help you make wise decisions. Why is that so hard for me to do sometimes? Think of it like this. If you see an ad for a construction company, and it says on that ad, 75 years worth of experience. You know, and I used to think, well, that should be a 100-year-old man out there that's been working ever since he was 25 years old. That's not how they figure that. It's very likely could mean it's a 45-year-old man that did construction for 25 years. Then he started a business and he hired 5 30-year-olds with 10 years of experience, and they add everybody's experience years together, and that's what they put on their ad. I used to think that's kind of a cheating way of going about it, but that's how they do it. So let's think about this a little bit. I don't know. I tried to count a little bit on here in this church. Is there 60 adults thereabouts? And I don't know what the average age is. I went with 30. And let's say we started counting time at 18. That would give every of the 60 people here, that would give everybody 12 years worth of experience. And you multiply that times 60, that's 720 years worth of experience sitting in church this morning. Now that's rough. You can tell me I did my math wrong. You can tell me. But hundreds of years worth of experience sitting here in our church pews. Why am I too proud sometime to ask from all those years of experience of people that have walked a road before me? You know what I mean? Am I too proud? What's my problem? We all have different gifts and talents. And we do well to dig into that in our church today. If we have a problem that we face, there's probably somebody here that if they don't have the answer, they could point me to where I could get an answer. Don't be ashamed to ask for advice. Apparently, we can't do everything as a church. Everything has its limitations except for God. Suppose I need, just for example, if I need brain surgery, and there's a lot of days I think I might. Suppose y'all have a meeting and y'all come up to me and you say, hey, we as a church, we decided we're going to solve your problem. We are going to do brain surgery on you. And Tony is going to go to the library and he's going to get a book on brain surgery. And he's going to pick somebody with some nursing experience or EMT experience. And we think we can fix you up. If I see y'all walking towards me with a saw in one hand, I'm hitting the woods running, I can tell you that. You ain't going to root around on top of my head with a stick. So this has its limitations, but still, we do well. My point is, while we maybe can't do everything here in this congregation, there's a lot we can do, and we need to be open to receiving advice. So I guess the challenge of this message for me and the challenge I want to leave with y'all today is what are we doing to benefit the church community that we're in? The old saying out there, and I firmly believe this saying, the church is a hospital for the sinners, it's not a museum of the saints. I believe that. But the flip side to that is, people don't go to the hospital just to stay in it. If you just go to the hospital and that's your home, that doesn't work. You either go there and you die, or you go there and they fix you up and you get out. It's not healthy for anybody just to stay there. So while that saying, the church is a hospital for the sinners and not a museum of the saints, my point is, what are we doing after we heal? Are we there just getting what we can out of the community that the church offers, or are we a contributing member of the church? For way longer than I care to admit, I was perfectly fine with riding the church wave. I was fine with getting out of it what I could and putting as little into it as I possibly could. And shame on me, there's still days I feel that way. You show up for the service, you put money in the offering, you talk just enough to get by in Sunday school class. You show up at a work bee, but only because you're a little worried of what people are going to think if you're not there. It's pretty easy just to coast through church life if you get in that groove. It's pretty easy. I was willing just to coast through church life, reaping the benefits of church community, but doing as little as possible to help build. And by building, I don't mean you have to be constantly running around promoting all things church and all things. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just showing up on a Sunday morning on time with a smile. And that goes a long ways. People notice if you're there on a Sunday morning on time or any time. I know of some churches, and I haven't seen it here, and I'd like to bless y'all for that, but I know of some churches that have a lot of, I guess you'd call it problems, of people sliding in just in time for the message, and when the last amen is said, the door slams and they're on the way out. And I'm not saying that's wrong to ever do that. But if that is your way of life, it kind of shows where your priorities are after a while. So I just want to bless y'all for what I've seen here in this church. Y'all do very well. Having people that are willing to be Sunday school teachers, even if they don't want to, whether they want to or not, that's a big deal. We need Sunday school teachers. People that are willing to help make food for funerals or when a baby's born. Well, sometimes we think these things are small and insignificant until you're the one that's on the receiving end, and then you realize what a blessing it is. We've been on the receiving ends. Little things like the camping trip yesterday and ball games, all these things, help build constructive church life. Sometimes we tend to think it's the big things that build church life. You read in Acts of them adding 3,000 souls to the church in one day. Boy, isn't that amazing? 3,000? And I'm not downplaying that at all. That was amazing. It was awesome and it's wonderful, but don't forget all these other little things that help build church too. Everyone is different, but you might not realize what a blessing you are to someone just by doing some insignificant little thing for them. I know there's been times in my life where, for whatever reason, I might have been down a little bit or had a little bit of a rough day, and somebody says or does one kind little thing, and it's very insignificant. But they don't know at that moment how bad I needed that. That's a blessing. That's what we're here for. We're here to help each other like that. A good church community can also help youth when they come to the age of accountability. I have three nephews today getting baptized in Missouri, and I just think that's awesome. And I am not downplaying the power of God. God can draw young people to himself that have never been in a church in their whole life. But I can tell you, those three young men being raised in Christian homes with Christian church community around them made that decision much, much easier for them to decide to follow Christ. Let's not forget that. So I guess the challenge for this message is, do I appreciate what the church community does for me and my family? And number two, what am I doing to help promote and build church community? Am I willing to be a tick and ride along and see what I can get? Or just ride along like a tick and see what I can get out of the ride? Or am I a constructive member? Which one am I? Which one are you? There's a saying out there, no man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent and a part of the main. If we think we can be our own community and live life without the help of others, we are fooling no one but ourselves. Let's not take the treasure of community that God blessed us with for granted. That's the challenge I want to leave with y'all. Proverbs 18:1, there's one verse I found. Just read it in closing here. Proverbs 18:1-2. Through desire a man having separated himself seeketh and intermingleth with all wisdom. A fool hath no delight in understanding, but that his heart may discover itself. It took me a little while to think that verse through, but through desire a man separates himself. And then it talks about the fool. I don't know. I don't know if I understand that verse perfectly, but it's something interesting to think about. All right, that's all I have for a message. Why don't we stand for prayer?